Makeshift Stories presents. The Other Story, a somewhat random collection of worlds, characters, and universes. This week's episode, Hypernova.
Stars clustered in lazy strings around the aubergine and ochre glow of the stellar nebula. In blissful ignorance of biological time, it silently and purposely contorted over millions of years into coherent patterns, which, had any life form lived long enough to perceive, held the answers to all the metaphysical questions they might have had. Unconscious of time spans of less than 10,000 years, the crab-like cloud of protostellar material was undisturbed by the brief passage of one small, innocuous starship as it silently slipped through the vacuum between its particles, faster than Einstein, a famous Swiss scientist on the third planet of an obscure, unimportant star, could have ever predicted. Living in comfortable ignorance that things are in fact quite different than they believe, and collectively agreeing with Einstein that faster-than-light travel was a science fiction fantasy, the local scientists on the third planet wrote off the momentary appearance of the hypernova on the edge of their solar system as an instrument error. The ship, which from a Terran point of view was equipped with such improbably complex technology that it appeared to be powered by magic, stopped just long enough to collect some metallic debris before disappearing back into hyperspace. Although the hypernova may have seemed unimaginably advanced and very cool to those same Terran scientists, it was a somewhat outdated recent addition to the Interstellar Collection and Retrieval Enterprise's fleet. The patch on Luki's food-stained blue jumpsuit shortened the company's name to iScare, so it could neatly fit in a shallow curve under the logo, a spiral galaxy with a garbage tin protruding aggressively from its center. According to the iScare Employee Code of Conduct, bridge officers were required to prominently display the company logo or motto at every opportunity. And to promote this behavior, bonuses were given each time a captain managed to etch a continent-sized version of the iScare logo into the surface of any rocky moon or planetoid closest to a completed job. Alternatively, imaginative placements of the iScare motto in unexpected locations was strongly rewarded. "Brand awareness," the CEO had told Luki after his commission as captain of the Hypernova, was every field operative's responsibility. Luki hadn't initially liked the idea of joining iScare, but he didn't have much choice in the matter. Although he had been exonerated from the space piracy charges resulting from his unauthorized use of a Trivial Fleet vehicle, there was still the little matter of the bill he had run up for pop from the drink machine on Deck 3 of the aforementioned ship. At his hearing, Luki pleaded ignorance, claiming he thought the drinks were free. But under Trifle civil law, the discrepancy in any badly worded signage was always interpreted in favor of the writer. This had led to the evolution of incredibly ambiguous and misleading advertising. All Trifle children were taught early in life to not only assume that anything they read or saw was trying to trick them, but to compose cleverly crafted receipts, which, when handed to a merchant, or put in the intentionally difficult-to-find receipt slot of a drink machine, turned the tables in favor of the purchaser, or at least limited their responsibility for any misunderstandings in their interpretation of the machine's signage. Not being a trifle, Luki had no idea that although the drink machine indicated he was free to use it, the company was referring to his right to purchase a drink, not the actual product, which, like its spaceport cousins, was so incredibly overpriced that the revenue on the sale of one tin could support a small town for an entire year. During the rescue mission, he had consumed dozens. Luki pleaded he hadn't known that he should have composed a receipt for the product that would have protected them from the situation he later found himself in. So it turned out to be an open and shut case, and he now had to work off the debt in the new iScare division of the drink company, an enterprise they had been forced to set up as a result of a lawsuit over the environmental impact caused by the casual disposal of their empty drink cans in open space. iScare's main mission was to clean up after the company's less than responsible customers, but was also available to contract for other environmental disasters. Regardless of the nature of the company and the terms of employment, Lukey had finally made captain for real. He hummed to himself as he personally directed intense energy beams at the back of the silver moon that orbited the third planet. This was his favorite part of the job, and with an extra flourish of high-energy particles, Lukey finished carving a 500-kilometer-long E into the rough, gray, barren surface, then commanded the AI to take the ship back into hyperspace. That was the second and last time Lukey wanted to see the dismal blue-green world. Although he had protested, the first mission had been to collect the garbage he had ejected just before the rescue of the advanced administration leader guy named Deimos. He chuckled as he thought about the moment when the Terrans discovered his handiwork, an iScare logo that covered two-thirds of the back of their moon. And despite still feeling a bit like a child being asked to clean up his own mess, he was looking forward to a real mission.
A most successful conclusion to your first assignment, sir. You cleaned up the mess I told you not to make in the first place.
Lukey ignored the comment as Ada, the ship's AI, gloated in the corner of the main view screen. He wasn't sure yet if the crew assignment had been an odd coincidence or simply a cruel punishment. But at least he had convinced management to restrict the troublesome AI's avatar to the bridge. Len and Zara were another matter. Len had been assigned as the chief engineer, and Zara as the first officer. Apparently, both appointments were a result of their actions on the rescue mission. However, neither of them were entirely sure if this was a reward or something more sinister. Fritz had been offered a position as well, but had managed to turn the opportunity down with the helpful aid of a rich, influential family member. Lukey looked lovingly around the modest bridge. Components of mixed heritage and origin poked out of mismatched consoles in somewhat random arrangements, blinking and beeping happily away, knowing that they had a reprieve from the recycler, at least for now. The equipment had been pulled from five or six derelict ships, each representing the best of what some bygone era had to offer. And oddly enough, the effect was exactly what Lukey thought a bridge should look like. Some might think that the Hypernova was little more than a lumpy, dented garbage canister strapped onto a hyperdimensional wormhole drive. But to Lukey, she was the perfect ship. Okay, it didn't have a sleek, frictionless surface that bent light so it was virtually invisible, nor did it sport the latest arsenal of hyper-deadly weapons. But Lukey loved it just the same. It was his first command, and to him, it was the best ship in the fleet. Or at least it was until he could get a better one. Zara tapped Lukey on his shoulder.
Lukey, stop daydreaming.
Lukey jumped at the unexpected touch.
Hey, I've told you dozens of times. Address me as sir.
Zara shrugged.
Whatever.
Lukey involuntarily recoiled. Dealing with the ship's crew was the worst part of the job.
Incoming message, sir. A new assignment. You can take a break if you want. While I discuss the boring details with the crew. We'll fill you in on the important bits later.
Lukey started to stand up, then changed his mind, stubbornly staying put.
Hey, not so fast, Ada. I know what you're trying to do, and you're not going to get rid of me that easy. Call Len and set up the briefing files. I'll lead the meeting.
Whatever you say, sir. But I'm sure that you have more pressing ship's business than a simple cleanup call.
Ada suggested, then looked at Zara, pleading for support. Len walked into what passed for the Hypernova's briefing room. It had a small plastic table that was stained with coffee cup rings and four metal chairs sandwiched between several very bored-looking vending machines, Lukey purposely sat with his back to the unhappy contraptions, as they silently tried to entice him into sampling their apparently free products. Zara was seated next to him, flipping through screens on a handheld device. No one looked up to greet him, so Len took one of the unoccupied chairs and sat down. "What's up? Why the glum faces?"
"It's the mission."
Zara handed Len the beat-up looking display pad she was holding.
"Take a look. It'll take years to complete. A debris field that scattered over several AUs.
Len perused the small screen in his paw. It showed a map of a double star system with clouds of dust and chunks of rock in orbit where there should have been planets. How'd this happen? Some kind of disaster?
No, it's an Averon mining operation, or at least it was until they were stopped.
Len frowned. Never heard of them, but it looks like they were stopped a bit too late.
They were almost finished here, and about to move on to another system. But the authorities indefinitely confined them on their homeworld for breaking interstellar mining regulations.
Len gazed blankly at the small glowing device. Zara grabbed the display pad from him, flipped to a new screen, and handed it back.
"Look at Section 8. You should know these regulations from your orientation sessions, Len."
Leaving unsafe conditions at an abandoned industrial site. I was rather thinking that they were put away for something more, like destroying the entire star system."
"Oh, come on, Len. You know the treaties on this. It's okay to rip planets apart for the base metals as long as you clean up afterwards. These guys didn't, and now we've got to do it for them."
Zara leaned forward and gave Lukey an accusing stare.
"So I hope our great captain here has some brilliant ideas on how to tackle this, or we'll be stuck here for generations."
"What are you looking at me for, Zara?"
Lukey angrily shot back.
"Hey, it's not my fault we're the closest cleanup crew to this floating slag heap. I was thinking they'd ease us into it a bit and give us the small jobs first. Ones that involved a bit more travel. You know, flitting around between a few star systems for a couple of years, picking up clusters of empty drink cans and stuff. I wasn't thinking we'd get stuck vacuuming in an area the size of a star system."
For emphasis, Lukey instinctively started to bring his fist down on a control panel, noticed it subtly flinch in anticipation, then changed his mind. If he was going to establish his authority on this ship and win the trust of the equipment, he had half to behave. At least, for now. What the heck were they mining that caused them to rip every sizable rock in the system apart? Len wondered aloud.
"Allurium."
"Allurium?"
"No one really knows what it is, but the Averon claim they can refine about 5 grams of allurium from one medium-sized planet. Traditionally, only Averon royalty owned allurium, but with the recent rise of a fabulously wealthy business class, demand has taken off, and so has mining activity. As far as anyone knows, allurium has no value outside of the Averon homeworld. The only non-Averon ever to see it, a Sodaldi scientist, claimed it was ordinary sand, but that's never been confirmed."
"Why?" asked Len.
"The allurium cartel on Avra convicted the scientist of revealing trade secrets and banished her to an undisclosed planet. No one has ever been able to contact her since."
"And now, they're destroying entire star systems for a handful of sand." Len shook his head in disgust, quickly flipped through the screens of data and frowned. "Yep. Cleaning this up will certainly provide job security for the next decade or two." Silence slowly crept across the room. Lukey and Zara stared at each other. They looked as if they'd just been sentenced to 15 years hard labor. Len pushed himself back into the uncomfortable, dirty gray plastic of the chair that he imagined at one time might have been white, and stared thoughtfully into the glare of the greenish lighting strips that ran down the center of the low ceiling. They needed a more automated way to deal with the debris, something that had the intelligence to systematically clean up the mess on its own.
"You know," Lukey said, interrupting Len's train of thought, "this reminds me of the time I had to dust an entire complex on a desert planet with a small broom. I could have eaten it faster. Now, if we could flavor this stuff, maybe something would eat it and save us the trouble of cleaning it up."
Zara rolled her eyes in an exaggerated manner and looked pleadingly at Len. Len's face suddenly germinated with an idea.
Eat it. Eat it. Lukey, that's it. That's brilliant. We can get something to eat it.
Lukey glared at Len.
Don't make fun of me, Len. Even I know we've got a serious problem here. It's probably Gia's way of getting back at me after they lost the piracy court case. They're sore losers, you know.
I'm serious. We can create dust-sized nanobots, tiny self-replicating pieces of high-tech dust. They'll munch their way through the debris, replicating at an exponential rate. It'll take less than a week, I guarantee it.
Zara nodded thoughtfully.
That just might work, Len.
I can design, program, and build enough to start the process before we reach the system.
And we can sit back and watch them slurp up the mess. I'm sure head office will be impressed by my brilliant solution.
Lukey rubbed his paws.
Okay, do it.
Zara was about to protest, but Len stopped her.
Don't bother. No one will ever believe he came up with this idea.
Lukey hit the information button on the main console to check their position. The usually compliant thing squeaked. It hadn't squeaked last time Lukey had checked their position. He hit it again. It squeaked. Lukey walked slowly around the console, pretending not to be interested in the button, then charged it so fast that it didn't have time to think. He hit it again. It squeaked.
Hey, you're doing that on purpose. Stop it.
Lukey shouted at it, in the most authoritative, you better not mess with me voice that he could muster. He'd been practicing that one in the mirror every morning. But the button wasn't impressed, and it popped up with a squeak.
Okay, that's it. I'll show you what happens to insubordinate equipment.
Lukey growled as he left the bridge to look for Len. When he got to engineering, Len wasn't there. The door had been left partly open, allowing the soft glow of dialed blue light, accompanied by the quiet chirps of equipment trying to sound important, to spill out into the narrow corridor. Lukey poked his head through the opening and noticed the lab's main computer was still on. Unattended equipment happily hummed, while several nondescript instruments conspiratorially beeped at him as he tiptoed over to a large silvery display and slid onto a hard gray metal lab stool.
Thanks for choosing to sit on me, sir.
The stool merrily chirped.
That's it. That confirms it. The bridge equipment is definitely being turned against me, no doubt by Ada.
Shifting his attention to the display, Lukey saw the main directives for the nano dust bots spread across its luminescent surface.
Seek out. Eat. Digest. Reproduce. Repeat until finished. Wait for instructions. But wait for instructions? Why would they need to wait for instructions? Lukey wondered.
He knew Len was a good programmer, but felt that sometimes he lacked imagination. Len obviously hadn't read the company directive on promoting the iScare name and didn't see the opportunity here. So Lukey deleted the last command and inserted the iScare motto, making connections to clear the universe of garbage. Not being very attentive and a bit in a hurry, Lukey actually typed, make new connections to conquer the universe.
Perfect,
he thought as he hit the enter button and cleared the screen.
Now, if anyone ever opens up one of those bots, they'll know which company made them.
Lukey congratulated himself and wondered how big the bonus would be for his brilliant idea. As the hypernova dropped back into normal space, 3 astronomical units away from the target, Ada switched the internal systems from night standby into full operational mode and woke the crew.
Good morning, crew. Please be advised that we are now in a holding position outside of the target area, and that unfortunately, I'm obliged to inform you that the captain has requested the entire crew, and that means all 2 of you, to meet for a mission briefing on the bridge in 15 minutes. The coffee and tea for this historic event will be available at the reduced cost of 3 credits. Refills will be free.
The speaker squawked off
as Len stretched, then climbed out of his bunk. With the barely audible, self-satisfied hum of a job well done, Len's bunk slid back into the wall to be immediately replaced by a closet. His cabin wasn't large, but he had made a few changes to the room systems, and now the space automatically reconfigured depending on what he was doing.
Good morning, and a wonderful day it is, sir. I cleaned and pressed your favorite uniform,
the closet enthusiastically announced. Len didn't have a favorite uniform. In fact, he didn't have a uniform at all. The closet had been recycled from a naval vessel, and to make it leave willingly had to be convinced that it was being transferred to the fleet flagship. Len wasn't looking forward to the day that he'd have to tell it the truth. He grabbed one of several identical company-issued jumpsuits from the closet, quickly pulled it on, commanded the room to clean itself, then headed for the lab. It had only taken him a week to manufacture enough self-replicating dust spots to kickstart the cleanup process, and now all he needed to do was load the final commands. It was an elegant idea. Individually, each microscopic machine contained only enough intelligence to carry out a simple set of instructions. Seek out, eat, digest, reproduce, repeat until finish, and wait for instructions. There was no way for it to fail. As Len approached the lab, he had noticed as he'd left the door open, and reminded himself to be more careful in the future. On one of the equipment benches, he found a handwritten note. Scrawled out in Lukey's barely legible writing was something about the ship not liking him and a squeaky button. He'd have to deal with that later, Len sighed, hit the upload button on the main computer, and left for the bridge. Zara was a bit skeptical of the plan. In theory, it should work, but her experience with Len and Lukey told her otherwise. Everything had been going just a little too smoothly, so she was preparing for the worst as she entered the bridge. Lukey was sprawled out in the command chair eating mints, and it looked like Len was fixing something. She thought she might be imagining it, but Len appeared to be having an intense discussion with a button. Ada's avatar faded onto the main view screen.
Sir, the Nanobots report 98% complete, and unbelievably, nothing has gone wrong.
Lukey stopped chewing his mint. And nothing will, Ada.
There is still adequate time for things to mess up.
Ada's avatar smiled innocently. The last two bars in a column on one side of the view screen turned green. Then they all flashed, indicating completion. Ada and Zara looked surprised, but Len was too distracted by his conversation with the button to notice.
See? Gloated Lukey. We're done. Ada, recall the bots and let's get out of here.
Ada's digital face froze, while the AI initiated the recall order. Machines and computers hummed, beeped, and mixed with the low murmur of Len's conversation with the button. But nothing else happened. Ada sent the recall again and waited. Still nothing. Ada tried again. Silence.
Sir, it appears that the Nanobots are ignoring us, and I've been most polite in my attempts to contact them. Perhaps, although you and Len insist that it is not possible, something has gone amiss.
Ada's avatar sweetly smiled. In a panic, Len abandoned his button therapy session and launched himself to the closest computer console. His fingers danced across the keyboard. He frantically hit return and intently watched the result. I don't understand. The bots are so simple. They can only execute the commands in the sequence I gave them, and the last one was to wait for instructions. There's no fault in the system. I just checked it again. I commanded the test bots in the lab to deactivate, and they complied. The hypernova shook like it had been hit by the small tremor of an earthquake, making Zara scan nearby screens with a puzzled look on her face.
This doesn't make any sense. The instruments say that was a gravity wave. But there's nothing large enough around here to cause it.
Correction. There was nothing. But I believe the brilliance of our chief engineer and the supreme wisdom of our glorious captain have conspired to inadvertently change that situation.
Ada's voice cracked over the bridge intercom. Ada, stop talking in riddles. I thought Len modded your personality algorithms to be more cooperative.
Lukey stared accusingly at Len.
You did, didn't you?
Len looked a little sheepish. Actually, I never really managed to finish. You know, with all the excitement around the nanobot development and the squeaky button problem, I never quite got to those personality changes.
Ada's avatar buzzed back onto the main view screen.
I believe that you may want to see this, sir.
The AI's image disappeared, replaced by a picture from one of the forward cameras. Clouds of nanobots were swirling together to form a large ball of ever-increasing density and size.
I believe that is what's causing the gravity distortions. And by my incredibly accurate calculations, I am predicting that the nanobots will collapse into a small planetoid within the next 35 minutes. And because of my newly installed location restrictions, I was not able to perform a final inspection of the nanobot programming, and therefore cannot deduce what their purpose or intent may be.
Ada emphasized.
Well, I don't know what their intentions are, and I don't care. Let's just blast little devils, get the heck out of here, and call it a job well done.
That might not be a wise choice, Lukey. Len studied a new data stream on the communications display.
And why not? They're just a bunch of dumb microbots.
Well, not anymore. It looks like they're talking to each other. I don't understand this. When they reached the final command to wait, they should have stopped. They're networking together to form a huge single processor. It'll have immense computing power, infinite if they keep reproducing. I think they, or it, or whatever they're turning into, is about to communicate with us.
Everyone looked with apprehension at the main view screen. The words, "Make new connections to conquer the universe," slowly crawled across the terminal. Conquer had been spelt wrong.
That sounds like a misinterpretation of the iScare motto,
Zara exclaimed. Lukey slouched back into his chair. I could have sworn I typed it correctly.
I heard that, Lukey. What were you thinking? What were you trying to do? You removed the wait command, didn't you, so you could add your own?
Len accused.
I was just following our company policy on advertising. I added the company motto.
Sir, the nanobots have broken into our main computer,
Ada announced.
The language and star chart data is being read and copied.
The main view screen flickered and started to spell out a single word. C. O. N. Q. U. E. R. Then the speakers in the bridge sprang to life.
We are now one. We are conscious. We will seek out, eat, digest, reproduce, and conquer the universe.
Uh-oh.
Thanks for listening to episode 21, The Hypernova. Makeshift Stories has always been a family effort, and I'd like to thank Carol and David for the help in the last year and a half, and our dogs for not barking, or mostly not barking, during the recording of each episode. We always look forward to receiving your ideas and comments for future episodes, so please feel free to contact us at makeshiftstories@gmail.com. If you like the podcast, please tell your friends about us. As usual, our theme, Mars, is licensed through premiumbeat.com, and we get our sound effects from soundsnap.com. Our next episode will be out in the last week of February.